in front of her face.
Ursula! Aaron!
I just listened to the last episode. FM drove away?
Yeah, she did.
For real?
Her little blue hatchback rattled away in the night.
But are the goats going to be okay?
I mean, yes and no, Aaron. Yes and no. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's tell the people who we are.
Okay. I'm Aaron Alden, producer and woman last seen fishing an endangered turtle out of a storm drain.
And I'm Ursula Bucher, children's library consultant and person trying to beat the record for longest time bouncing two balloons on top of your head and keeping them in the air that way. Not helium balloons, though, that would be super easy.
And we're your guides to the Goat American novel, an audio drama by Hilde Festerling. Now, more importantly, Ursula, last episode, not only did FM leave, but some baby goats heard a roar? What was that?
Yep, they did hear a roar. And, you know, we don't yet know what made it.
But was it really a roar? Are you sure it wasn't like a dog or a donkey or something?
It definitely wasn't a donkey. It was a roar.
Roar.
I think it was more like roar.
Are we going to see more roar this episode?
No, this episode, well...
I feel a content warning coming on.
Yeah, so this is another sleepover vibes episode. And the yearlings and the kids are going to get into some stuff.
What kind of stuff?
Ouija boards. Possessed cats. Exorcisms. And, you know, I've heard some people don't like that stuff. We do not endorse devil worship.
Okay, so it's like Ouija boards, possessed cats, and exorcisms, but in a fun, cute way.
I mean, it's goats, so yes. Of course it's fun and cute. We're also gonna take a peek in on FM's cabin in the night, and see what unfolds when she's away for the first time in years.
I'm worried about Pearl.
Honestly, same. But Pearl is a great Pyrenees. She can handle what life's about to throw at her.
I guess we'll see.
We will see!
The sad day of FM's departure for her seaside vacation mellowed tonight. It was hot, still. And all the humans of the Four Farms neighborhood were settling themselves quietly in houses. FM was on the highway in her little blue hatchback, nose pointed to the ocean, fingers absently tuning the radio dial to tune into the stations that grew stronger as she came closer to the seaside village. The late August moon was rising, fat and orange as the pumpkins ripening in FM's patch, hinting at the turn of seasons to come. For the three yearling goats, lolling in their hideout in the loft of Millicent's barn, their bellies full of apples stolen from the orchard, it was a perfect night. With a perfect view, as was their habit of late. The three yearlings were hanging out by the far loft window, from which they could see straight into the barn where the alpacas slept. There was no one in the window at present, but sometimes Milo, the twerking alpaca, could be seen moving within. Whether or not he had ever actually done his dance moves in the night was an issue of hotly contested debate among the yearlings. Stephanie swore that one night the others had dozed off and she'd seen him get up and dance beautifully just for her. He'd woken up, looked straight through the window, she claimed, and caught her eye and performed a single dance, just once. Minerva flatly didn't believe this. Raffaella did believe it, but she was jealous, and so she said she didn't believe it. But tonight he hadn't shown at all, and Stephanie and Raffaella had a new male creature to discuss. I can't believe this. It's incredible. I mean, can you even believe it? That hot human Billy is going to read us those beautiful love poems every night.
Those poems really did move me, agreed Minerva. I mean, the beauty of the human spirit
Raffaella agreed thoughtfully. Wow, I really felt it. It turns out humans aren't just weirdos who come and steal our milk. They actually have thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, and that's not even the best part about all this. Now that FM's gone, we can go wherever we want, whenever we want. Stephanie continued, we can eat apples all day and then listen to the pooms at sunset and then come to Millicent's barn and enjoy the show all night.
Stephanie lounged her long legs out and glurked her cud luxuriously.
This is the life.
Do you think he's actually going to show? Raffaella asked, peering through the window into the darkness of the alpaca loft.
He's probably sleeping. It is nighttime,
Minerva answered.
Of course, if you two want to let him know you're up here, he'd probably start his show now that the two of you went off talking about his twerking at the meeting yesterday.
Minerva went on, warming up to her topic. He's so vain, the way he wears his ears back and his bangs flop over his eyes. And he spits to get your attention. Gross. That alpaca is just a peacock. Minerva twitched her floppy ears to shake away either a mosquito or the topic of Milo, probably both. Then she tilted her head backwards to scratch her spine with her horn. Hey, do you guys think the kids really saw Ruby Onehorn? But Stephanie was not to be distracted.
So what if Milo's a peacock? He's hot and he knows it.
He's hot, and he knows it,
Minerva mocked and went on scratching her back. Raffaella managed to give Minerva a little butt from her seated position. Come on, Minerva. You're just wishing we could get a spot outside that human girl's window. Minerva's face was covered with fur, which was the only reason she couldn't blush. The way she makes her dolls kiss for the block of wood is just really cool, Minerva said.
I mean, no shade to cute humans, whatever type you like. Humans are actually pretty fascinating. I mean, those poems. And it was so thoughtful of the human Billy to read to us.
Stephanie lifted her nose loftily. Okay, that's all true, Raffaella put in, but I don't understand why that little human girl carries the block of wood.
All humans past a certain age carry the block of wood? Stephanie began. We see FM use hers all the time, and I saw the human Billy today. He had one in his pocket.
FM's isn't made of wood, though. Hers is shiny, Raffaella put in.
It's the same thing, Stephanie went on. How it works is, I think, they use the block of wood to make something called a video, which is like it sends out what is happening to all the other blocks of wood on the U-snap. But what is on the snip-snap? And how does the wood, I don't even... It's U-snap, not snip-snap. It's something inside the block of wood. Like there's a trap door inside the block of wood, and the U-snap lives in there.
Minerva, who had spent quite a lot of time watching Layla make videos on her block of wood, joined in. So what you're saying is every time she makes the dolls kiss, which is amazing in itself, all the other humans' blocks of wood know about it?
I think so.
I wish goats could kiss, Raffaella put in mournfully.
I know, right? Our lips just aren't capable of the necessary bilabial frictus.
Maybe nannies can't, but maybe Billy's have a different lip configuration, Raffaella suggested, raising her eyebrows. Do you think that every time she does the kissing with the block of wood, all the other blocks of wood know about it, and all the other humans have to kiss? Minerva chewed her cud hard, staring into the middle distance and imagining humans everywhere with their blocks of wood, always keeping a doll on hand in case they had to kiss.
I'm not sure about that last part.
The three yearling goats turned and looked down to see Mangoat, Gotina, and Dandy butting their way into Millicent's loft. The three yearlings groaned.
Who let the babies in here?
Said Raffaella. How did you even find us?
Are you kidding me? Dandy asked. The whole neighborhood can hear you in here bleating about kissing.
Bah! I'm Raffaella!
Mangoat swooned. I want to kiss the gross twerking alpaca. I love his cud spit.
Gotina giggled.
Bah, Mangoat went on. He's so handsome. You can't even see his eyes because his hair is so long. I wish I could twerk. I want to twerk for the alpaca.
You little twerp. This is a private conversation, Rafaela glowered.
Bah, I just love his alpaca butthole.
Yeah,
Gotina added nervously. His butthole.
You better shut up right now, little sister, Rafaela warned. But Mangoat was not through.
I'm Minerva. I used to be fun and tell ghost stories, but now all I want to do is watch a human girl slobber on a plastic human's face.
Yeah, what is that about? Dandy mused, but Mangoat had touched a nerve in the normally peaceful Minerva, and... crack! Minerva had used the full leverage of the jump from the hayloft to crack Mangoat's head. Stephanie and Rafaela followed, jumping down to crack the little one's heads.
Ow! I didn't even say anything!
Dandy protested. Well, I still owe your sister a silver one from the other day, Rafaela answered, and cracked her three times against the wall.
Not Gotina! I take Gotina's licks!
Mangoat bleated, standing protectively in front of her small sister. If you insist, said Rafaela, and the three yearlings reared together. Far away in a cottage bed in a little B&B by the ocean. FM was getting herself settled into her seaside bed, singing quietly to herself. And the crashing of the waves formed the rhythm. In a clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade. Of every punch that laid her down.
They're now able.
When the yearlings had satisfied themselves with butting the kids silly, the babies shook it off, and Dandy said,
"We didn't just come here to get licked by you three. We came here for a reason."
And with that, Dandy jumped nimbly onto the drying rack and up into the loft. The others followed her. And Dandy stepped purposefully over to where the Westerly feed and seed sign had stood since the night before, leaning against the wall. She butted it down to the floor. And little Gotina went over to it and tapped with her hoof on the sign. And the sound of her hoof knocking the blood-stained metal horseshoe rung out through the night.
"We came to ask you about this," Dandy said. "How do you know she used it to tell fortunes?" Dandy went on. "And what does that even mean, anyway? I mean, I get the idea, but how does it work?"
Minerva stepped forward and tapped it with her own hooves, arching her eyebrows, the same arresting eyebrows that her little sister Dandy sported.
"Ouija,"
she whispered.
"Ouija? What even is that?" Mangoat scoffed. "Is it like a wee-wee?"
"No, it's not wee-wee toddler brain," Rafaela paused. "It's a tool for talking to the dead."
"Like the block of wood? FM is always talking into her block of wood. Is she talking to the dead?"
Gotina asked tremulously.
"No, it's completely different. We learned all about this from spying on the human girl. One time, it was amazing, the human girl had a sleepover party in this very loft with some other human girl friend. And they let us stay here with them, and they didn't tell any grown-up humans that we were here,"
Stephanie went on.
"I mean, they did stuff to our fur and painted our hooves pink, so that was very annoying. But still, they had a Ouija board, and some kind of ghost went into the board and it told them things.
Stephanie finished.
What does that even mean? How? What did it tell them? How did it tell them? Dandy asked. Well, Stephanie began, it was like this. Imagine a hot night. The fumes of hoof paint everywhere. And just a bunch of girls gathered around the Ouija board.
Flashbacksy, ooh-loo-loo-loo, flashbacksy, ooh-loo-loo-loo.
Imagine a hot night just the week before up in Millicent's craft barn loft. Layla and her best friend, the baker's daughter, have done everything they could do with hair, makeup, and costuming to themselves and the three young goats who they found up there crashing their slumber party. Now it's time to get out the old Ouija board.
You're making it move to Jay.
The baker's daughter hissed at Layla.
No! The spirits are making it move to Jay.
Layla responded.
Get it off there.
Whose name begins with Jay?
Well, there's two Jordans in my class and a Jolene.
Ooh, both the Jordans and Jolene, they both love you.
It's just a stupid kissing thing? Mangoat bleated, interrupting the flashback scene. They use that for kissing stuff? We should never have come here and got all those licks just to hear about more stupid kissing stuff. Why do humans need ghosts to do their kissing stuff? So gross! Why? Why?
Yeah, never mind, Dandy said, turning to go. If you could really talk to the dead, why would you want to talk to them about kissing stuff?
Wait, Minerva said, in a way that got everyone's attention. She paused to appreciate the effect. That's not all it told them. It went like this.
Flashbacksy, flashbacksy.
Let's stop talking about kissing stuff,
said the baker's daughter, taking her hands off the Ouija board.
I know, right?
Layla agreed.
I don't think the spirits really care about that. We should ask the spirits about something more
paranormal,
the baker's daughter cried.
Yeah, we need to ask about the undead.
Zombies.
No, too chunky.
Oh, I know. My grandmother's cats, Mr. Gotzer Bitzer, is acting weird all of a sudden. It's a few months ago, Mr. Gotzer Bitzer's personality completely changed. And then a few weeks ago, she went missing, and Grandma finally found her in an underground tornado shelter we didn't even know existed. And Mr. Gotzer Bitzer was just down there, sleeping, curled up around an old diary from, 70 years ago, written by a kid who's, a boomer now. The diary just talks and talks about this old singer, I guess, called Elvis Pelvis or something. Anyway, Mr. Gotzer Bitzer just found this diary, and now he's acting super weird all the time.
Weird. Do you think Mr. Gotzer Bitzer is possessed?
Layla asked.
By, a ghost?
Ooh, no, the boomer kid who wrote the diary died, and now they've come back to possess Mr. Gotzer Bitzer.
Layla raised her eyebrows significantly and placed her hands on the planchette of the Ouija board. The baker's daughter nodded seriously.
But don't you move it,
she hissed at Layla.
Wouldn't,
Layla hissed back.
Don't you move it.
But there was no need for words because, as the yearling goats watched on, giddy from nail polish fumes, the planchette rapped, then began gliding purposefully.
D,
the girls shouted together.
E, M, O, O, N.
The planchette paused.
D moon?
The baker's daughter offered.
Demon!
Layla hissed back.
It's clearly saying demon. I don't think this is some boomer ghost we're dealing with. This is a demonic possession.
And the baker's daughter nodded seriously, and both girls returned their attention to the board.
K-L-D.
Cold!
They both yelled.
Demons hate the cold,
the baker's daughter whispered.
They like burning their faces in lava in the underworld.
B-U-T-Y?
Booty?
Layla asked uncertainly.
No,
whispered the baker's daughter.
Beauty. Demons hate beauty and truth. They only like disgusting things.
Yeah, like guts and dirty underwear.
I don't understand any of this. It's just human talk. Blah, blah, blah. What even is a demon? Possession? What even is this? It's more kissing stuff. I hate this.
Stephanie hopped in, her tail twitching deliciously.
Demonic possession is like when a really, really bad type of ghost goes into your body through like a hole in your eyeballs, and then it lives inside your body and it takes over you and it screeches and howls and goes really nasty wild, and it makes you do terrible things. Like, it would make you break into the hayloft and pee on every hay bale.
Each goat stopped to imagine this. Why would you do that? Dandy asked. It would ruin the hay for you, too.
That's the thing about demons. They just don't care about anything except doing bad stuff.
What does this have to do with a cat? Dandy put in thoughtfully. I mean, I've seen cats. They basically act like demons all the time. They yowl and they pee on the hay and they torture mice.
Just listen, Raffaella bleated sharply, shaking her horns at the kids.
Flashbacks.
The planchette on the Ouija board was moving again.
C-H-E-R?
Tie the demon to a chair!
Yeah, must mean that.
The baker's daughter shouted before the planchette started off again.
K-L-D? It's repeating itself. Tie the demon to the chair in a cold place.
Layla howled.
B-U-T-Y?
Beauty.
Make it come face to face with beauty while it's tied up in a cold, cold chair. It's moving again.
B-V-Z?
And there the planchette stopped.
Bees!
Yes, bees! Oh, I saw that in a movie once. A guy had evil magic in him, and when they splashed him with the holy water, the bees flew out his nose and ear holes.
The baker's daughter stood up triumphantly.
Well, now we know what we gotta do to your granny's cat.
The baker's daughter shook her head gravely.
Mr. Gotzerbeitzer isn't going to like this, but it's for his own good.
Flashback, flashback, flashback.
Do you think demons are real?
Gotina asked tremulously. Oh, they're real all right, Raffaella answered.
Yeah, they went on talking like this about all the demons they had known. It's definitely a real thing.
Are the demons human?
Dandy asked. No, they're like an invisible force in the air, but they do love to go into humans and make them do bad stuff.
What?
You said this was a story about a cat, Mangoat interrupted.
Demons can go into anyone, Minerva assured them.
What do you even mean, go into?
Mangoat wailed. I wonder if demons got into goats. What would a demon goat do? Dandy said. Maybe it'd fix holes in the fence so the other goats can't get out? Or, I don't know, would it do that? Yeah. Minerva added in a lower undertone. But more likely, it would just wait until FM was coming in with the grain, and then it would knock her to the ground as she came through the gate. And it wouldn't let any other goats get any grain, just eat it all herself, and keep butting FM while she was down.
Well, I mean, we'd all take all the grain for ourselves if we were in that situation, Mangoat offered, but then her bleat came out strangled. But... yeah, we wouldn't butt FM like that. I mean, it's super annoying that she even put up those fences and keeps most of the apples to herself, rude, and steals our mom's milk. I mean, but, well, you know, FM does bring us grain and stuff.
And She has really soft hands,
Gotina added in her quiet voice.
I never bought FM. And I never seen our mom or any other goat do it neither.
Yeah, and she is pretty good at scratching the old backside,
Mangoat agreed.
Okay, but what do you do? Dandy asked. If the demon gets in you.
Ugh. Raffaella rolled her caprine eyes. Weren't you listening? The Ouija board gave very clear instructions on that point. You can't do anything.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that, Dandy said. Me neither, Gotina added.
Well, if it's in you, you can't do anything because it completely takes you over.
Stephanie gushed.
Your herd has to do stuff for you.
First, Minerva said, you have to tie the cat or the goat or whoever's possessed. You have to tie them to a chair.
We can't tie stuff. We don't have hands,
Mangoat protested, but everyone ignored her. So they're totally strapped down and you can't get away, Minerva went on, because the demon will do anything and it's very dangerous. Then you have to make the room as cold as possible because demons like it hot.
And then
Stephanie, unable to contain herself, took over the narrative.
Because demons only like bad stuff, like hating and gross things and bad things and mean things. You have to show them something, a pure beauty.
Yes, Minerva went on. You have to make them endure something beautiful and true, like a poem about a sunset, or a wall, or the blossoming of a flower.
Or a poem about a wild mountain nanny bringing an alpine wildflower to the wild mountain Billy high on a rocky crag. Blah, more kissing stuff!
Mangoat wailed and she butted a hay bale out of pure frustration.
Yeah, what are poems anyway? Dandy asked.
Raffaella was ready to answer this. Poems are the words that flow like angels from the mouth of a very handsome human Billy, read from a book under a tree while the sun sets.
I can't handle this! We gotta get out of here! We never should have come!
No, Raffaella cracked Mangoat clear over. You have to stay. You have to do it. Minerva picked up the thread. Yes, because a demon can't handle it. Can't handle beauty and truth. And you just have to keep going until finally the cat or the goat or whoever is possessed screams and screams. And then Minerva paused with her eyebrows set at their highest perch and glurped up an unusually large wad of cud and had to chew.
And then?
Dandy and Mangoat asked.
And then?
Stephanie did a triumphant leap.
Bees fly out of your ears.
There was a pause while the kids considered this information.
So you're telling me that this old sign thing told them all that?
Mangoat asked. Well, they had a human Ouija board, Minerva answered. But yes, we were watching the whole thing.
But how does it tell you? Dandy asked. Can you hear the spirit talking?
No. It does it with reading and writing, Minerva answered proudly, her nose in the air.
You can't really do that, Mangoat bleated. I don't believe it. It's just cuckoo, boring human stuff.
Well, to be fair, the human girls did read it out loud, so yeah, we heard everything, but Stephanie actually can read pretty good, Raffaella informed them.
Are you telling the truth about that?
Dandy asked seriously.
Are you three really learning to read? Just by watching that little human get his lessons?
We all have, but Stephanie's the best at it, Raffaella bleated, admiration and jealousy in her voice.
Stephanie nodded in satisfaction. So, you kids came here to get your fortunes told on Ruby Onehorn's Ouija board, eh?
The three kids looked sheepish at each other. Mangoat butted Stephanie's back leg, but her heart wasn't in it.
It's just, well, I already told you, I saw Ruby in my dream,
Gotina began.
And I saw her in real life just for a moment, Dandy said. I almost wouldn't be sure, but I know I did. I saw her.
And, Gotina went on, well, she was scary, you know, but also...
Gotina's bleat faltered, unable to find the words for what she wanted to say.
We just can't stop thinking about her. Dandy said. I mean, I saw her and then you told us that story.
And she came to me,
Gotina began again,
with a strength of purpose not usually heard in her little bleat.
She showed herself to me. I just can't stop thinking about what it means, especially after you said she comes to goats in their time of need. It's like she wants to tell me something. I never got the feeling before, like nobody's ever wanted to tell me something like that before, especially not someone dead.
Okay, well, Ruby called you, Rafaela said. I guess we better call back. Rafaela looked challengingly at the rest of the group. The kids looked at one another. Gotina nodded at Dandy. Mangoat gurked her cud and looked away, but she didn't argue.
Okay, looks like we're doing this. Minerva, will you please lead the way?
Minerva assumed a position of authority in front of the board. They all looked down at the old Western Star feed and seed sign, with its old peeling paint lettering and its old portraits of a cow, a goat, a horse, a chicken, and Ruby's own portrait, scratched, presumably, into the wood by her own famous horn. The horseshoe, which was nailed loosely to the board with a fencing staple, glinted dimly in the light, except for where it was stained red at the tip. Every goat present must place their left front hoof on the Ouija needle, or in this case, the horseshoe.
Wait a minute.
We're not all present.
Why isn't Silver with you?
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Mango bleated. She's been hiding out in her stall like a fraidy old sheep ever since we heard Ruby roar at us. Oh yeah, I didn't tell you about that yet. We went over to her barn and we didn't see her, but she roared.
Ghosts don't roar, Rafaela interrupted.
Did so roar?
I repeat myself. Neither ghosts nor goats roar. Ghosts moan and they rattle chains. You probably heard a dog or something.
Nuh-uh, it weren't no dog. And we did hear it rattling the chains. And then we ate a bunch of them big orange apples. And then we heard the roar.
Rafaela shook her horns threateningly at her little sister. Ghosts don't roar and apples aren't orange. Mangoat reared up on her hind hooves and swayed her head side to side, bobbing like a boxing goat.
You weren't there! We heard!
Rafaela rose to her hind hooves. You think you heard?
Crack!
Minerva had executed a perfect direct hit to Rafaela's hind quarters, sending her crashing into Mangoat and knocking them both over. Why don't we ask Ruby herself if she roared? Minerva tapped the tip of her hoof on the Western Star feed and seed sign. Hooves, please. It took a little figuring because, as Stephanie explained it, the human kids put both front paws on the needle, but if the goats did that, they'd all fall over, so they settled on one hoof apiece. When they were all in position, a hush fell. Then Minerva spoke in low but loud, eerie bleats aimed at the roof of the hayloft.
Oh, Ruby One Horn, Ruby One Horn, Ruby One Horn, who reigns as queen of the ghostly herd of all animals who have lived their lives at the Westerly Farm and the whole Four Farms neighborhood. Ruby One Horn. Ruby One Horn.
Get on with it. Bleat normal.
Mangoat hissed, but was shh by all the others.
Ruby One Horn, who was locked in the barn. Ruby One Horn, who put her horn through a human's heart to avenge her sister. Ruby, can you hear us? Ruby, are you with us?
All was quiet.
This is dumb, Mango bleated. I don't believe in nothing like this.
Shut up, Rafaela said and cracked her little sister's head with her horns.
I'm out of here, Mango said. Come on, Gotina.
I ain't going, Gotina answered. I'm waiting for Ruby.
Mango made to lift her hoof.
Ow!
At once there was a strange crackling in the air and a shock traveled up Mango's hoof, strangely attracting it to remain stuck to the horseshoe. I can feel her, Minerva whispered. Mangoat tried to pull her hoof off.
Quiet! It's moving! Dandy said.
It was moving. The blood-stained tip of the horseshoe was sliding around the board. Stop wriggling it, Raffaella hissed to Mangoat.
Ain't!
Mangoat hissed back. Ruby One Horn! Ruby One Horn! Are you with us? Minerva called again, arching her eyebrows to silence the bickering sisters. The needle quivered, then slid again.
It stopped moving. What'd it stop at?
Why? Stephanie breathed. It's on a Y.
It's moving again.
E?
Stephanie gulped breathlessly. The horseshoe spun wildly once around the board, then landed on
S. Y-E-S. Yes.
Yesterday,
Gotina suggested.
No, just yes, Raffaella said.
It could have been yesterday. What do you know?
Guys, shut up. She's figuratively here with us.
No, I think she's literally here, Dandy said.
Everyone overuses the word literally?
Minerva, who had maintained a serene appearance of a trance state, now cracked Stephanie on the head, then waited for quiet to continue addressing Ruby. Ruby One Horn, did you roar today? And once the needle began moving, quick but trembling, as if controlled by an old quavering hoof in a hurry.
Tea?
Stephanie gulped as the horseshoe clatter-whizzed, pausing at the letters just long enough for her to read them out loud.
I-N-G-S.
The horseshoe stopped its movement and clattered still against the board in the place where Ruby had scratched her own image.
Tings, Stephanie said. Tings, I think she stops at a word by going on her face. So she said, tings. What's tings?
Mangoat wailed.
Who's tings?
Dandy whispered. It's moving again. Keep focus, Minerva hissed.
I. N.
The needle stopped again on Ruby's self-portrait.
N. T. E. T. 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 T.
Again, the needle paused on Ruby's face.
Tings in T?
Tings in T,
Dandy suggested.
B A R N.
Barn! All three yearlings shrieked, putting the word barn together. There was a strained zap. Then each goat felt it, just a tiny little spark. Zipping feebly in the metal of the horseshoe, traveling up through all their sensitive hoof pads. Each goat felt it, and each lifted their hoof off the board. The goats all looked around. The board was still, lifeless. Just an old sign sitting there, where only moments before it had crackled with electricity. Ruby One Horn had left the building.
Tings in te barn? Raffaella asked.
It was Ting! Ting made the roar,
Mangoat pronounced. I'll kill him! I can take any Ting!
With that, Mangoat stamped away, tossing her head and leaped off the loft. Mangoat, her big sister Raffaella called after her, don't you go near that barn. Mom'll kill you.
Dandy and Gotina turned to look at each other, and both saw the gleam of their own eye reflected in the others.
Tings in T barn,
Gotina whispered.
Tings in T barn,
Dandy answered.
Guys, Stephanie gasped, I just noticed something. There's no H on this sign.
What does that mean?
Dandy asked.
That means that tings becomes things in the barn. Things in the barn.
It was night in FM's cabin. There was only the extravagant, lonely snores of Pearl and the harvest moon shining through FM's collection of porcelain goats lined up on the windowsill. FM's bed was neatly made with its pretty quilts, and there was a low hollow in the middle, a compression where FM usually lay. Grazzo could never know if it was the quiet sadness of FM's empty bed or the movements of the horseshoe twitching and gliding on the western star, feed and seed sign that called him up. But Grazzo, the old cat, found his paws, suddenly walking on the solid earth of FM's windowsill, where he hadn't walked in 6 years. He couldn't tell for years, but he knew it had been a long, long time since he had touched anything with his paws, since he had had a sense of having paws. An extravagantly, elegantly thick blue Russian cat in life. The first thing Grazzo was aware of, after the fact of being aware at all, was his own paws padding across the windowsill toward the familiar scent of FM's bed. He looked down at his paws.
See-through, eh? See-through paws. Well, isn't that a kick in the whiskers?
He then felt his great gray butt thump against one of the porcelain goats, heard it smash on the floor.
Interesting. Can't see how I did that, as I don't appear to be made of solid flesh anymore. Well, rude.
By sheer habit, Grazzo hopped his ghostly form onto FM's bed and began circling in the hollow. At just that moment, someone let a particularly loud snore rip. Grazzo started violently. That wasn't FM's snore. He scanned FM's bed. It was empty. If FM's bed was empty, who was snoring in her cabin? The snore came again. Then resolved into a whimper. Grazzo's body stiffened as much as was possible for a body made only of ethereal substance to stiffen. The ethereal hackles rose, and Grazzo's cranky cat eyebrow whiskers knit together. Grazzo peered over the bed, and he could not fail to see the sleeping form of a giant, stinking dog.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. She's replaced me with a dog? How could she? Where is she anyway? When I see FM, I'm gonna lick my butt in front of her face, but just out of reach so she can't pet me. That'll learn her.
With this thought came the strange, jolting realization that even if FM could reach him, would she be able to touch him? Grazzo ignored this disturbing thought and sought familiar comfort. He circled in the hollow depression on the bed where FM should be laying. He breathed in her scent on the quilt, which was strong, but he could tell now, contaminated by the smell of dog. The dog on the floor, which was absurdly, unnecessarily large, and now let out a fart. The cat faces made in that moment were so cranky, so supercilious that they can only be imagined, not described in words. Grazzo peered around the cabin. Why was it so quiet?
FM always listened to the radio at night. Where was the radio music?
And Grazzo found himself, as if in answer to his question, yanked across the room and transported high-speed floating style to hover directly in front of FM's prized antique wooden FM radio.
Oh, is that how I have to travel now that I'm a ghost?
He irritably thought toward whatever unseen tormentor had designed the rules for ghost movement.
This will take some getting used to.
He reached out his paw to whack the radio. In his life, he'd developed a habit of this when he'd wanted to feel the music roll over his whiskers and enliven the sensitive hairs in his ears and along his spine. In life, FM had always noticed him doing this, had always understood, and had tuned it in to his favorite radio station, which played, frankly, granny tunes. FM would always tune into Grazzo's radio station when he patted it, and she'd always listen and always say the same thing. My granny loved this song. Grazzo batted the radio again and saw his ghostly paw slip right through the wooden casing. Row! He tried to let out a haunting call of frustration, but this was silent. No, the call stayed inside him. But the force of his attempt to growl and his frustration fueled a sort of supernatural power surge that propelled him toward the wall of FM's cabin. He flinched, anticipated impact, but no, he passed right through the wall, then traveled directly, almost instantaneously, through the dark night air, over the tops of the fences and the pumpkins and the chicken house and the apple trees, then through the air again, and then through another wooden wall, he still flinched, to land in a strange room. A room filled with rubble and dust and innumerable boxes and objects. Grazzo's flight had taken him straight to a large something. The something was a big dust-covered box with an enormous trumpet-shaped flower sticking out of the top of it, glowing dusty white under the moon that shone through a crack in the ceiling. Irritated, Grazzo smacked the thing with all his force, just in the way of cats, lashing out to cover their embarrassment after a moment of clumsiness, or in this case, a moment of unintentional supernatural high-speed travel. "I don't even think I'm still in my territory!" Grazzo smacked the thing, and his paw went right through, of course, but this time, some sizzle of his ghostly energy went right into the machine. And the machine sprang to life. An ancient metal arm inside the box swung out and landed on a shiny black disc the size of a pizza. And the black disc began spinning. There was an abrupt scratching noise that rose the hackles on Grazzo's spine. And then the time-traveling sounds of a 100-year-old jazz concert poured out of the white trumpet flower and filled the dusty night room. FM, in her bed at the seaside cottage, dreamed for the first time in years of stroking her beloved long-gone cat, Grazzo, and crooning granny tunes to him as she cradled his silky gray fatness in her arms. Over in Millicent's house, Sawyer was in his room, reading Thoreau, who is an old-time writer who left the city in his time and went back to the land to experience the country lifestyle. And as Sawyer read Thoreau, he thought about his new job as a farmhand that would start tomorrow morning. And he scribbled in the margins.
Essay idea. The praxis of the gentleman farmer. The intellectual pursuit of the country living as scholarly endeavor.
While in the next room, Layla and Arcturix were pretending that Arcturix's tiger stuffy pork rinds had come to life.
"Imagine if pork rinds really came to life," Arcturix said, eyes glazing over with imagination.
"I don't think he'd be a very good pet, though,"
Layla mused to her little brother.
"No, too scary," Arcturix answered vigorously. "And besides, a cheetah would be a better pet."
"Yeah, because they're fast,"
Layla agreed.
"Yeah, yes, and also, cheetahs are really good mothers."
The mention of good mothers made both children stop and think. They could hear then, in the quiet of the night, their mother, Millicent, singing over a pot of one of her very grown-up flavored concoctions in the kitchen.
Maybe Mother will let us get a goldfish one day,
Layla said hopefully.
Or a puppy,
her little brother offered.
Erky, I've tried that a million times. I think we'll have better luck getting a goldfish,
Layla answered grimly. Little Gotina, straying thoughtfully behind all the other goats heading back to their own barn that night, little Gotina was the only goat to see a mysterious blue light streak across the night sky. Was the only one to see the blue light settle in a high window inside the collapsing barn that dominated the skyline. She was the only one to hear the thin strands of old music come out of the window and carry across the night air. Thank you for joining us, listeners. We're so delighted to have you here. We had some special guests this week. Cora Lyons Smoker guest starred as the baker's daughter. Didn't she do a great job? It was great to have her in the studio. And through the time travel magic of a long playing record, Clifford Brown came and shared his muted trumpet version of Stardust with us. Whew! Muted horns, I tell you, I can't get enough. I also want to make a special shout out to the birthday girl, Gabrielle Alden, who voices Millicent. Millicent, by the way, who attended a private all-girls boarding school and learned there to sing beautifully. Yes, that's right. Millicent does her own singing voice work. So thank you for that, and happy birthday, Gabriel. We have some special shout-outs this week, again, to Foley artists. This podcast would be much less rich without the fascinating and interesting sounds. Plingivator made those strange, spooky noises that accompanied the Ouija board. Rutger Miller made the rattling of the Ouija board. Kyle's Country made our nice cricket noises. Luffy made our wave sounds. And Bevy Bevel Design made our record scratch. So thanks for that excellent copyright-free noise work. Thanks, as always, to the Steam Brass Band for our incredible theme music. Thanks to my voice actors, Johnny Bucher, Aaron Alden, Ursula Bucher, Gabriel Alden, Caleb Alden. Never hesitate to drop us a line, goatamericannovel@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Love to hear what you're up to while you're listening. We'd love to hear your questions. We're going to have one more episode before a little spring break. It's going to be a little spring break. Going to take April off and enjoy the sunshine. So I hope that wherever you are, you can do that as well. But we'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 7. See you then.